So grateful that you tuned in once again here on the Get With Soon podcast, your podcast for surfing, spirituality and creativity. And in today's episode, I'm talking with another special guest, another special guy from Australia. I'm talking about Heath Josk. He's a former participant of the WSL Tour and an environmental activist. As the head of the campaign Fight for the Bite, he gathered surfers from all around the world to protest against Equinor, the Norwegian giant that wanted to start drilling in front of his beautiful front yard, the Australia's Big Bite, a unique place where nature still seems to be untouched. This interview is also a cooperation with Germany's Blue Surf magazine. For the latest issue, the 20th anniversary issue, check out the show notes and you can order the whole issue, which is a beautiful mag, as always. I love that magazine since it exists, I guess. So, yeah, now just one thing to say. Due to the connection we had with the internet when we had this conversation, there have been some problems due to the connection, so please have that in mind. And yeah, now just relax and sit back listening to Heath Josk.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Cool. Nice to meet you, mate.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Good to connect.
Get straight into it. So the time after the Fight for the Bite is over now, right? Right now. What does it feel like right now after this whole process of the whole campaign and all the work and all the people involved? What does it feel like for you right now afterwards with the success of the campaign also?
Yeah, it's just a really big relief for myself, but for the whole community locally and the coastal communities around Australia, really. And because it was so widespread with all the protests, and you know, so many people from all different walks of life got involved. It was a pretty amazing one for, you know, Equinor to withdraw and for us to actually feel like we got a win, and yeah, so many of us to feel that way. It was really incredible. But yeah, I'm just feeling good that we're, you know, next summer there's no risk that there's going to be a well blowout and our beaches are good, the ocean, as I have down here for the moment. But it's not all you know, tied up out there. It's the government's still in trying to entice other companies to give it a crack out there, but they've seen all these other big companies withdraw, and the leases out there are the actual numbers of leases with the company's name attached to it is dwindling big time, and a lot of companies are pulling out. I think 3/4 of the leases have been withdrawn now, which is really great news. So yeah, it's definitely awesome.
Yeah, it's so cool. And what I'm still asking myself, I think a lot of people do, so what's the problem with the government? I mean it's always, when we all have these fights for our environment, for the ocean and stuff like that, it's always small people that need to fight and not the government itself is taking action, you know? So what do you think, what needs to happen to change that? That the government itself takes action for the interest of all the people in general.
Yeah, well, they should, by rights, you know, be looking after the people. But unfortunately, the major political parties in Australia, you know, they receive huge donations from these fossil fuel companies every year, and they're heavily in bed with them. They try and talk their way around it or whatever, but a lot of the guys that are high up in government are actually, you know, got family at the top of the food chain in those fossil fuel companies, or they've been involved themselves years before, or they retire and go into one of those positions. Like it's a bit of a revolving door for those top dogs in government with those fossil fuel companies. So they need to stop getting donations for a start. And you know, from what I've seen, the independent candidates in Australia, they really just represent the interest of their community most of the time. So they're great. But they just have trouble getting in for some reason. You know, people keep on voting for Liberal or Labor, and we're stuck with the same problems again and again.
Yeah. I mean, the whole fight was also like kind of a thing like David against Goliath, right? As we see from history always, it's happening again and again and again. So what did it feel like for you in the beginning when you started that whole thing? Did you have great hope, or was it like, ah, let's try it? And what have been your expectations of the whole thing?
Well, you know, really early on in the piece when we were fighting against BP, it was so much smaller scale, the protests that were happening, and so much more localized. But even at the time, because I was so heavily involved in it, and I guess I'm a pretty positive kind of guy, I was kind of hoping that our actions would impact the situation, and that BP did end up withdrawing. Now, there was quite a bit of protest, but it wasn't nationwide like that was against Equinor. But it wasn't really until I went to Norway and I went to Equinor's headquarters and just saw the size of the company and their power and how much of a, you know, force they were, and realized, and you know, as I got deeper involved in the campaign, just realized how much our government was just, you know, waving the candy bar at them to just entice them to come and give it a crack, and probably not telling them, you know, the full details of how dangerous it was, and definitely not telling them the full extent of the opposition that didn't want it. So that was a real worry at that stage. But the protests just went massive in Australia, like nothing I've seen before. Like, you know, the whole country of around the country, all the coastal communities coming together on this issue, and it really got a fair bit of airtime. And I was really hopeful that we were going to see them withdraw before the end of last year. I was hoping it was all going to happen, and then, you know, at the end of last year, just before Christmas, government approved that Equinor to go to the next stage, which was, you know, pretty much meant that they were going to drill next summer. And, you know, we all thought it was pretty much over then, like that they didn't have any more hoops to jump through with government. It was only a year away from when they wanted to go. Yeah, sort of lost a fair bit of hope then. And a couple months later, they were out.
So what is it for guys like you who live in this nice area, you know, in this beautiful place close to the ocean? What emotions are coming up when you first hear from big labels like BP or Equinor who want to start something over there? What comes up in emotion-wise?
Well, emotional-wise for me, I'm just angry, and then, you know, preparing for battle, and to make sure they know the extent of how the damage that they can cause, and just how dangerous it is. Do they realise, you know, how ferocious that Southern Ocean is, and how little infrastructure we've got? Well, we've got nothing to deal with consequences. But yeah, it's. It's so much to risk down here, and that's what I wanted to say about it. Actually, sorry, was no, I just don't. They don't understand the connection that we as surfers have with the ocean, and we might look a bit different or sound a bit different, and no, we don't follow that lifestyle. So maybe we don't quite get listened to as much as we should a lot of the time. You know, I know at a lot of the local meetings here, it's the more, you know, ragged outdoorsy part of the community that's coming out more vocal than anyone else. And, you know, they're not coming along in suits and trying to dress up and look the part. They don't give a shit. They're just super concerned about their coastline being destroyed and their lifestyle being destroyed. And they know this ocean and this coastline better than anyone. And, you know, to their credit, to Equinor's credit, the guys that came here and had meetings with us, they they did start giving us the time after a couple of years of us, you know, banging on the back door of council meetings and, you know, singing the song outside of those council meetings to, you know, show them that we needed to be listened to as well. You need to talk to us. And then they started to. And, yeah, I don't know. I like to think and hope that they actually do listen to your concerns and do listen to try and understand, you know, some of our knowledge of the coastline and take that on board. You'd like to think so, but you know, whether or not they do, I don't know.
Yeah. And there was a moment, I read it in another interview, when you met those people and stood face to face with these people during kind of a meeting or stuff like that, right? What did that feel like to be confronted with the people who want to take your nice environment and kind of want to destroying it? And
yeah, it was tough, man. It was really tough. The first time, like I said, that day we went to their headquarters in Oslo, and their offices are just, you know, gigantic, like nothing I've seen before. It's got like a, you know, 100-meter freestanding, like overhanging concrete building, you know, that's 50 or 10 stories on top of it or something. It's a crazy engineering feat in itself. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, having the meeting with those guys, and that was specifically with the it wasn't the CEO who I met later on. It was the guys who were sort of pushing ahead with the campaign in the Bight. And that time I didn't feel like they were listening as much, and I started to get a bit angry. Like my heart was pounding, and I had to really pull back and control myself at that point, which was difficult because, yeah, you just want to scream at them or something. I don't know. It was kind of hard to control, but I did. And then when I met the CEO as well and handed over all of the hundreds of letters that had been emailed to me to take over there from lots of concerned citizens all over Australia, as well as the surfers letter that had been signed by 28, it had been signed by, you know, all the living world champions in Australia, which had 28 world titles between them, as well as, you know, lots of quite a few other really iconic Australian surfers, and handed that over to him and just said, this is the first time all these people have, you know, signed a letter all opposing something together, and surfing's a huge part of Australian culture. So you need to know the weight of this bit of paper. Mm. And also I said, you know, I'd like to think that you'd take the time to read these letters and try and understand some of our community's concerns and get a feeling for it, because he's never set foot in the Bight or wouldn't have a clue of what it's like over here. He's just getting information fed to him from his, you know, the people below him and our government. So, yeah, but both times I had to really just try and control myself and, you know, breathe deeply and stay calm. And before I went into the AGM and met the CEO, I took half an hour and just went and, you know, sat under a tree, the closest tree I could find, and just tried to, you know, take some deep breaths and connect and just be calm and fluid. Is that's how I needed to be, and yeah, I think it worked.
Mm. So during the whole fight, what have been the biggest challenges during the whole campaign throughout the time?
Just longevity has been a really big challenge. You know, there's people up and down the coast here that have been really heavily involved at different points, and it's just really hard to stay committed over the longer haul and not just get, you know, devastated and put off at all the setbacks along the way, because there is, you know, there was 3 or 4 government approvals before Equinor pulled out. Like, it seemed like they'd made it all the way through. It's easy to lose faith along the way. Yeah, I was told numerous times by, you know, local fishermen or other people that were really concerned, or local surfers even, that you know, they didn't want their coastline to be destroyed or harmed at all, but they'd never thought that we were going to, that these massive companies were going to listen to us and actually take on, you know, our concerns and pull out. So having a lot of people tell you that, you know, it's probably not going to make a difference is hard to deal with a lot of the time. And them getting those approvals along the way is super hard to deal with and to maintain, you know, hope that they are going to withdraw. But the whole way along, I was still, you know, even this year right now, if they were still in it, we'd be fighting. We'd be, you know, we would be rallying to try and stop it, because it was a massive one for Australia and for the surface of Australia. Like, the extent of the damage that could have been done was really unlike anything we've ever seen before, and unlike any other project that's ever been proposed to Australia could have done. Like, it's really unbelievable how far that oil could have spread.
Talking
like 2/3 of Australia's surfable coastline.
That's crazy. Really.
Is thousands of kilometres from, you know, southwest Western Australia to my home is over 2,000 kilometres. And then it can go all the way up to where I grew up near Coffs Harbour, which, if you followed the coastline, that's, I'd only be guessing, like 4,000 or 5,000 kilometers, and then they were saying it could go over to New Zealand and cover Tasmania. It's like, why would you even consider a project like that? Seriously.
Yeah,
it's totally. Just the extent of damage is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's what comes up in my stomach all at the moment. Also, like, how can campaigns even think about the idea of doing stuff like that? You know, that's so crazy. Just for the money, it's so stupid that it's.
Yeah, it really is nuts. And, you know, when we're living in a world that should be, you know, moving towards these sustainable technologies that we've got, and then we've just, you know, got these greedy companies and greedy leaders of a lot of our biggest countries in the world that just want to, you know, keep on making as much money from these fossil fuels while they can. It's over. It's time to look after the planet and see it, you know, rejuvenate and come back and thrive. It's, I think we've done enough damage.
Yeah, absolutely. In a little amount of time, if you look out the whole, since our planet exists, it's so crazy. Like, the last 200 years, and it's just like a spit, like a snap in human history, and it's, we destroyed everything almost. It's so crazy. So
yeah, some of those quotes that you read, you know, when the last tree is chopped down and the last trip has dried up and, you know, everything's come to an end. It's, and you think about it and go, oh, that's never going to happen. But geez, the way things move sometimes, it's a real worry. But you know, there is lots of positive things happening in the world as well. So I like to look on the positive side, and you know, locally, you could, all these revolutions and the good things all start from the bottom. So what you can do personally is going to, that's a big part to play, and that hopefully will grow from there, and more people are doing that, and yeah, and we can start to make a change.
Yeah, totally. So what do you think the surface itself, the surfing community itself, could do on a daily basis to raise the awareness or keeping the awareness high? Because it's always like, we always have like campaigns and demonstrating against, but something that it's flowing on the surface the whole time, you know, so that we know, hey, it's important. And that's why what I'm already scared right now. Now we have this black movement again, which is a good thing, but I also am scared that it's just, oh yeah, now it's trendy, it's for 1 week, and then afterwards people forget again. The same with the coronavirus, you know, it's so crazy. We humans forget so fast.
Well, yeah, when we're just battered with so much information nowadays, you know, that, and in Australia, the last 6 months it's, you know, been horrific, really, from the bushfires over summer. They started a year ago and went and stretched for 6 months. You know, from those bushfires straight into this coronavirus, and now what we're seeing in the States unfolding, and really you know, unfolding around the world as well. It's a really wild time. But, you know, a lot of people are holding hope for positive change to come from this. You know, hopefully we see some countries trying to make the right decisions to, you know, take this opportunity to implement, you know, better living environments for everyone and more sustainable ways of living. So, yeah, and I know in Australia it's been, you know, I love gardening and I'm out in the garden every day and looking after my chickens and ducks and planting trees and really think that's a great way to do our part to try and, you know, help the planet. And in Australia, since this coronavirus, you know, all the local nurseries have sold out of all their veggies and all the seeds are sold out and online as well. Everything's selling out. It's that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Which, and people are signing up to all these permaculture courses and you know, things like that more than ever. So hopefully, yeah, things like that get to grow after people get to spend a few months at home and take some time out and just, you know, do a bit of gardening or, you know, spend a bit more time with the kids and just, you know, a little bit more basic, whatever it is. But yeah, just need to all slow down a bit, hopefully.
Totally. Yeah. Even this also, like with the other subject as well, I think also this lifestyle could be promoted more from the government also, like, and also like, when we think of nutrition, when you go in a normal supermarket, the stuff they sell, it's just maybe 5% that's really stuff you can consider as food, as real food. The rest is just garbage. It's chemical stuff. It's so stupid. It's I don't know. It's crazy.
Oh, man, yeah, you're spot on. And I've been listening to a few regenerative agriculture podcasts and just sort of looking into that sort of thing, because I've got a couple hundred acres here and I live in quite a dry part of Australia, and you know, it's been pretty hammered over the years from agriculture, just running it down to the ground with sheep and you know, losing a lot of topsoil and whatever it is, it's done a fair bit of damage. But seeing these guys with regenerative agriculture running a range of animals and growing a range of crops and, you know, keeping it all local, as well as just the local movement of, you know, having a bigger veggie garden that you can share a bit of excess with your neighbors and they can share a bit with you. And yeah, moving back to that sort of community-based, you know, food source and yeah, just more of a local commodity would be so beneficial for on so many levels.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think that a lot more people are getting educated and want to eat healthy food. They don't want to eat garbage. They want, you know, they know that organic food's just, you know, brimming with nutrients that non-organic stuff isn't. And more people want to buy that. So as the demand comes in, hopefully it becomes more local and we can see a bit of a change.
Absolutely. Another question I had concerning the bite. What do you think is easier? Because the bite was more like kind of a very remote region where maybe few people also don't have that emotional connection because they maybe haven't been there. Is it more difficult to do a campaign against companies like the bite area, or for example, if you take areas where surfers are surfing anyways each day and it's crowded spots and they know the region is famous for surfing, and you think that would be have been more easier even than for the fighting for the bite?
Yeah, I do. There was many times I thought that the only reason, you know, companies were applying to do such a dangerous drill was because it was so remote and they thought, oh, we could give it a crack here because, you know, it's who's going to really care, you know, a couple thousand people that live on the bite and it's not too bad in the scheme of things. But yeah, the bite is so incredible as well in the amount of sea life we have here that's so rich in fisheries, that it's Australia's biggest fishery, and the opposition isn't too much. But I think once the information got out there that, you know, they did some scientific studies once the first licenses went out for drilling in the Bight, and that came back with the knowledge that 85% of the species in the Bight were endemic to the Bight. They weren't found anywhere else in the world, which is incredible. You know, it's important breeding grounds for the southern right whale. It's the only breeding grounds for the Australian sea lion. It's also breeding grounds for the blue whale, right in that zone where they wanted to drill in that same depth. And it supported such a huge array of fisheries here, from crayfish to tuna to oysters to prawns to, you know, shark and abalone and, you know, all your whiting and snapper and all the smaller and different types of fish as well. But that employs, you know, I'm not sure what the exact figures are, but so many people down here, more than anywhere else I've been in the world. You know, most people that you meet, they're either a fisherman or a farmer, really. It's a lot of people fish. So it's the ecosystem in the ocean down here is amazing. It's just, you know, full to the brim. It's so healthy. So once Australia started to realise how healthy and how important this sea was, I think that helped them get on board, as well as them seeing the extent of what a whale blowout could look like.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you grew up in this area, or you moved there, or you're from there originally?
No, I didn't grow up here. I grew up half an hour south of Coffs Harbour on the mid-north coast of South Wales.
Oh, nice.
Little town called Valor Beach. I lived there until my sort of early 20s, and I was competing on the qualifying series for 5 years, and every a couple of summers in a row.
So yes, at this point we had another issue, and the rest of the interview for the magazine we did just per email. There have been two questions left, but I hope you enjoyed the whole talk anyways. And if you like to, please feel free to give us a little review on iTunes. So go to iTunes, look up for Get Wet Soon, and then just leave some stars and maybe also a written review. So thanks so much, and have a great day. Hear you next time. Bye.